Welcome to Torah Mechanach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Yirmiyahu Perek Vav, Chapter 26. The previous perek took place at the cusp of the Babylonian rule in the fourth year of Jehoiakim's reign, when he was taken over and occupied by the incoming Babylonian army. This perek takes place a few years earlier, in the beginning of Jehoiakim's reign. Yoshiyahu had just been killed, and Jehoahaz dragged off into exile and ruling for only 3 months. The time was still ripe for tshuva, and the Judeans have the opportunity to avoid even the Babylonian occupation, which we, the reader, know is going to come in less than 4 short years. Perek 26 is a fascinating perek because it is a window into what happens after a prophet finishes speaking. Usually, we have chapters in Navi where we see a prophet speak, but we never know what the people think of it. This chapter is a narrative that is a sister perek to a prophecy that we have seen earlier in Yirmiyahu, probably connected to Perek Zion, chapter 7, the one where Yirmiyahu declared that the people must stop believing their false prophets who tell them, Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem Hema, the Beit HaMikdash will save you. In the beginning of Perek 26, Yirmiyahu gives a summary of the Nevuah that he gave earlier, ending with his threat that if you don't believe me and change your ways, then I will destroy the Beit HaMikdash just as I destroyed the Mishkan. What happens next, though, could be a scene out of a movie. In Perek Chet, we read, "Vayhi kechalot Yirmiyahu ledaber et kol asher tziva Hashem ledaber al kol ha'am." As soon as Yirmiyahu finished giving his nevuah, "Vayipisuoto hakohanim v'hanaviim v'chol ha'am lemor mot tamut." The people, the kohanim, the neviim, they grabbed him. They start tearing at him and they start screaming, "He should die! He should die!" This is extremely violent language. The psukim go on to say they gathered around Yirmiyahu. They're grabbing at him. What's happening here is not a simple case of people disagreeing with Yirmiyahu. What's happening here is a mob. There's going to be a lynching here. The people are being egged on by the priests and the false prophets. They are ready to tear Yirmiyahu apart limb by limb. They are actually going to kill him with their own hands. So, not the best response to his nevuah. Yirmiyahu is literally on death's door. He's about to be killed by the people when he's saved by the arrival of the officers of Yehuda in Pasuk Yud, verse 10. "Vayishma'u sarei Yehuda et hadvarim ha'ele." The officers of Yehuda are sitting at the palace. Remember, the palace is down the hill in Ir David, and they hear there's this ruckus going on because they're hearing the mob trying to kill Yirmiyahu. So they go to investigate, and they walk up the hill, and they see there's something going on, and they sit at the gates. When officers sit at the gates, that means that there's going to be a court case. So now the mob shifts into a court case. Who's on trial? It's Yirmiyahu. He's being accused of saying false prophecy. He is actually being accused by the false prophets of being a false prophet, which carries a death sentence. So now the scene changes, and instead of having screaming and yelling, we're going to have sides present their cases. So first, the Kohanim and the Nevi'im step up to state their case. This is the priests and the false prophets accusing Yirmiyahu in Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11. "Vayomru ha-Kohanim va-Nevi'im el ha-Sarim ve-el kol ha-Am." So say the priests and the false prophets. Lemor, "Mishpat mavet la-ish hazeh." This man is deserving of a death sentence. Notice, by the way, that the words have changed from mot tamut, he should surely die, to mishpat mavet, a death sentence. That's because we've changed from a mob to a court case. Why? "Ki niva el ha'ir azot kasher shamatzem ba'aznechem." Because he's prophesied against the city, as you've just heard. They cannot accept that Yirmiyahu's words could possibly be true, and therefore he must be a false prophet. Now, it's Yirmiyahu's turn to defend himself. He's in a bind because it's very hard to prove that you're not a Navi Sheker. Yirmiyahu's prophesying something that's going to happen in the future. It didn't happen yet, so there's no way to prove that he is or isn't lying. And yet, he has to defend himself because he's being accused by very important people of saying something so blasphemous that it can't possibly be true. And the reason the false prophets are saying this is because it To them, it is impossible that the Beit HaMikdash would be destroyed. It goes against everything that they believe. And therefore, Yirmiyahu saying that it will must make him a false prophet and be deserving of the death penalty. Yirmiyahu defends himself in the only way he's able to, by using fear and guilt. He first reiterates that he is not a false prophet, that he is sent by Hashem, and the people must change their ways in order to avoid the coming destruction. But then he ends by saying in Pasuk Tev Vav, verse 15, Ach yadoa teidu, you should surely know, ki inim itim atem oti, if you kill me, ki dam naki atem notnim alechem, there is innocent blood that's going to be on your hands, ve'el ha'ir hazot, ve'el yoshveh, and on this city and the people, ki be'emet shlachani Hashem aleichem, le'daber beznechem et kol dvarim ha'ele. I am a true prophet and I was sent by God. What Yirmiyahu is saying is, what if I'm right? What if you're wrong and I'm right? So let's play it out. If you're right and the Beit HaMikdash really is going to protect you and you don't have to change your ways, so who cares? So I didn't really tell you anything that's going to change so much in your life. But if I'm right and if you don't change your ways and the Beit HaMikdash really is going to be destroyed, then not only is my blood on your hands, but the blood of the entire city, the blood of all the inhabitants, all the people that are going to be killed in the Chorban are on your hands for killing me. It's a much better idea to keep me alive and do what I'm telling you to do. Change your ways just in case I'm right. But certainly you shouldn't kill me. This makes an impression on the judges and the people, and they declare him not guilty. Once again, Yirmiyahu is saved. Now the judges have done their job and they leave. Now we have a scene where the people start talking about the verdict. A group of elders who assumedly had been quiet before while Yirmiyahu was almost ripped apart by the mob, but now they're elevated by what the judges said and having declared Yirmiyahu not guilty, they start to berate the people and themselves for not listening to Yirmiyahu. They are on his side. They're backing up the verdict. They bring up an example of an earlier prophet, Micha, who we know as a prophet from Treasar, who gave prophecy to King Chizkiyahu, and he gave the same prophecy that Yirmiyahu is now giving them, that you need to change your ways or the Beit HaMikdash will be destroyed. Instead of trying to kill him, Chizkiyahu listened to Micha and took his words to heart. He and the people of Judea at the time did teshuvah, and Hashem averted the decree. They finished their speech by saying in verse 19, Va'anachnu osim ra'a gdola al nafshotenu, we have doing terrible things to our own souls. And they're referring here, first of all, to almost having killed Yirmiyahu, but also the way that their society is corrupted and how they need to change. Seems to be looking up for Yirmiyahu. Now he has a not guilty verdict, plus he seemed to have convinced some people. He has supporters. However, just as they are finishing up defending the verdict and look forward to actually changing themselves as the people, another group of people stands up. They also have a message for the crowd, and they also cite an example of another prophet. They tell the story of Uriah, a prophet who lived actually right now during this time, who also gave the same prophecy as Yirmiyahu and Micha, namely that if you don't change your ways, the Beit HaMikdash will be destroyed and the people will be exiled. But Uriah had a very different fate than Micha. His king, Jehoiakim, who's the king at the time, doesn't listen to him at all and change his deeds. Instead, we read in verse 21, Vayvakesh HaMelech HaMito, Jehoiakim wants to kill him. Vayishma Uriah, and Uriah hears about this, Vayar, Vayivrach, Vayavo Mitzrayim, he's terrified, and he runs away all the way down to Egypt. But that wasn't enough for Jehoiakim. Even though Uriah is now in Egypt, and his influence is not going to be felt in Judea, no one's going to be able to hear his prophecy, Jehoiakim elects special officers, and they're named, and they go down to Egypt, and in Pasuk Kaf Gimel, verse 23, Vayotziu et Uriah mimitzrayim, they take Uriah out of Egypt, Vayiviu el hamelech Jehoiakim, they bring him to Jehoiakim, Vayakehu b'cherev, and he kills him with the sword, Vayishlach et nivlato el kivrei b'nei ha'am, they throw his body into an unmarked grave. Jehoiakim personally kills Uriah. It is so important to him that Uriah not just not have influence, but be dead, that he actually appoints people to go get him and throw his degraded body into an unmarked grave. The next thing we know from the Perek in Pasuk Kaf Dalet, the last Pasuk of the Perek, Ach Yad Achikam Ben Shafan Haita et Yirmiyahu Levilti Tedoto Biyad Ha'am Lahamito. Yirmiyahu is saved at the last minute by somebody named Achikam Ben Shafan, who saves Yirmiyahu from the nation who's about to kill him. So it seems after this story, hearing the story about Uriah, something snaps in the nation, and they are once again a mob, ready to tear Yirmiyahu apart with their own hands. The word ach, but, signifies that Achikam was only able to save Yirmiyahu at the last minute, but not before he was surrounded and probably hurt and beaten. So this nevuah did not go as planned. Instead of listening to Yirmiyahu's prophecy and changing their ways and forming a more just society in which they start to care about each other, the people turned on Yirmiyahu and tried to kill him, not once, but twice in this parak. Instead of inspiring change, Yirmiyahu barely escapes this scene with his life. But we have to ask ourselves, how do we understand the people in this parak? In the beginning of the parak, they're a mob. In the middle of the parak, they're impartial observers. They're listening to the testimony of the priests and the false prophets and of Yirmiyahu, and they side with the officers to give Yirmiyahu a not guilty verdict. Then that means they're on Yirmiyahu's side. Then they listen to these two groups of people. They hear the story of Micha. They hear the story of Uriah. And by the end of the parak, they switch back to being a mob again. What in the world is motivating these people? So it seems to be that we understand the motivations of the Kohanim and the Nevi'im. The Kohanim, they were just personally attacked by Yirmiyahu saying in Parak Zion that the Beit HaMikdash has turned into a Ma'arat Pritzim, a den of thieves. They were attacked for not running the Beit HaMikdash in a way that's conducive to religious growth, if anything, is pushing the people farther away from Hashem. The false prophets were also attacked by Yirmiyahu. He called them out on being false prophets, and we know that being a false prophet carries a death sentence. So he attacked them and accused them of something very harsh. So we understand why the Kohanim and the Nevi'ei Sheker, the false prophets, turn on Yirmiyahu and try to get him killed in this parak. But what about the people? What's motivating them? What benefit is it to them to believe certain people over others? And why do they keep switching sides? So it seems to be that the key to understanding this parak is that what motivates the people is a hot meal on their table and a comfortable bed to sleep in at night. The people just don't want trouble, so they follow whoever has, at the time, the most power. In the beginning of the parak, it's the Kohanim and Nevi'im. They're egging them on. They're telling them, turn into a mob. They listen. They allow themselves to be pushed forward. After all, the false prophets are offering them security and telling them that nothing will happen to them and everything will be okay. So they rile them up. They turn them into a mob. But then another character steps into the scene. It's the Sarei Yehuda, the officers of Yehuda. Oh, well, now they have more power than the prophets and the priests. So now the people leave their allegiance to the priests and prophets, and they align themselves with the officers. Now they're impartial. They're listening to a court case. And when the Sarei Yehuda, who actually want justice, say that Yirmiyahu is not guilty because the evidence just doesn't support it, the people are on their side. They're very happy to say that Yirmiyahu is not a false prophet. But then the Sarei Yehuda leave. The elders take this opportunity to actually try to cause change. They bring up the story of Micha from their past, and they say, Chizkiyahu, he listened to his prophets. Let's follow that model. But then another group of people stand up, and they say, wait a second, Chizkiyahu was king 100 years ago. What difference does it make to my hot meal at the end of the day in my comfortable bed, whether Chizkiyahu listened to Micha or not? I need to think about my political situation right now. And right now, Jehoiakim is king. And we know what Jehoiakim is like. We know because they illustrate it to us in very, very specific details. They tell us about Uriah, who gave the same prophecy as Yirmiyahu. And they tell us in a lot of detail how Jehoiakim was not satisfied with running after Uriah, but he sent people to go down to Egypt, find him, killed Uriah himself, and disgraced his body. Now suddenly the people realize there's someone who has more power than even the officers, and that's King Jehoiakim. He's the king right now, and he doesn't like prophets who speak the way Yirmiyahu is speaking. He doesn't like people that are ruining the status quo. He doesn't like people who are starting up with the false prophets who support Jehoiakim's reign. And therefore, the people switch sides once again and align themselves with the priests and prophets who are once again able to rile them up into a mob. Seems to be that the message of this story is that people follow whoever talks the loudest and whoever carries the biggest stick, but that's not always the way to go. Yirmiyahu wants them to see truth, and we have people in this story who do see truth. We have the Sarei Yudah, the officers, and we even have the Zakenim, the elders who want to cause change. But regular people are swayed not only by who shouts loudest, but who's going to give them the most comfortable life. They don't want to start up. They don't want to rock the boat. Yirmiyahu's message to them in this parak is sometimes you have to. Sometimes you have to stand up to people like Jehoiakim. Sometimes you have to stand up to these priests and prophets. It's not okay to live your life just being comfortable. Either way, Yirmiyahu leaves this parak forlorn. His nevuah was a failure. The people despised him, and they ended up not only not listening to him, but even trying to kill him. It's probably at this point that he runs to Anatot that we read about in Perek Yud Aleph. Thank you for studying together, Le'iloi Nishmat Malka Esther Batzvi Yosef.